You're listening to episode 99 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Birth Tech Day Bonanza.
Awkward silence. Let's just do this. Let's just do it, man. Let's just do it. It is time.
Okay.
Time has come.
I want my birthday present. Give it to me.
Okay. All righty.
The future? Okay.
The future is now.
Yes.
It's in the PDF at this moment. But
I gotta say, it's really not though. I mean, it's still kind of the future.
Which,
it's just starting to clarify.
I was kind of like a PDF. I guess it's really long, I suppose, and it makes more sense to have it in a PDF.
Yeah. Have you actually looked at the PDF? It's
yeah.
incredibly long.
Isn't it like 57, 60 pages,
yeah.
something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to read it.
I went to download it on my phone and went, whoa, this was a mistake. Because it's
yeah.
not a small file at all, which
no.
I get it. That's why you would probably put it in a PDF, so you could edit it and stuff and not have to worry about HTML formatting, because you're just like, no. So anyways, there was Elon Musk finally revealed the Hyperloop.
Oh, baby, the Hyperloop.
Do we need to say anything else? Can we just move on to the next story? Or
probably.
So it's he is a physicist, as you know. He is also awesome, as you know. So he came up with this idea. Let me see. I'll give the broad strokes, non-engineering kind of interpretation of what it is, and then you can actually fill in with what it actually is.
Cool.
So essentially, and there's parts that I'm fuzzy on that you'll be like, oh, yeah, I know all about this. Because he split his report into two sections. The section from me, which is the non-technical layman's term, very straightforward description, and then which was like 2 pages, and then the rest of it,
right.
which was the more technical, like actually had numbers and diagrams and drawings, which I flipped through really fast and went, yep, not going to read that. So, you know, I was looking for pictures, really, which was...
Right.
Because that's where I'm at on this stuff. I was like, let's just see if there's any cool pictures. So from what I understand, the idea is you start with the tube. Whoosh, that's a little bit off the ground. Sounds like it could be anywhere from 5 feet to 100 feet. Kind of depends. And this tube has solar panels on top, which are essentially giving it power. Inside mm-hmm. the tube mm-hmm. are pods whoosh, that are making that noise as they're going really fast through the tube. What's interesting about it is they are essentially he described it a long time ago as like an air hockey table, but it's like inversed. So instead of the tube pushing the pod up, the pod itself has air on like little skis that are pushing down, which then causes, you know, a little bit of a gap, which makes it essentially frictionless, and boom, you know, it can go. What's cool about using that kind of technology is it doesn't require a zero air situation or vacuum situation, just like a low, I'm not using the right term here, like a low vacuum or low air pressure. There we go. Pressure. That's the word I wanted.
Yeah.
A low pressure situation. And then he talked about how he's like, the problem though is that when you're trying to fit something through a tube, you get all this sort of back pressure that happens, and so on the very front of it, they essentially have like a little pump that will grab the air, so you don't have you release the pressure that's in front of the pod, and then that does two things. Number one, it you know takes that air and puts it down so that it floats, and then it also pushes it back, so it you know keeps pushing it forward. I don't remember how it gets started, if that's electromagnetic stuff or not, which you can fill me in, but essentially this thing goes like 700 miles an hour at peak speeds. And what I thought was really interesting, he says that this is primarily designed for inner city travel that's less than like 1,000 miles. I don't remember what the optimal range was, because he was like, once you get over 1,000 miles, then supersonic jets start to make a lot more sense, or just flying in general from a cost perspective. But this thing could go theoretically from California to LA, from LA, California to like San Francisco in, was it like 30 minutes? Pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
For the cost of that equivalent plane ticket, which would be a lot more. So that's the essential concept of it. What started this whole thing was California's high speed rail approved a lot of money, which I thought was funny. He said, he goes, I used to say it was the slowest and most expensive train. And he goes, and some bureaucrat got snippy at me and said, well, there are other ones that are more expensive and there are other ones that are slower.
Right.
They're not the same ones, but you know.
Right.
And so he was like, so it's one of the slowest and, you know, most expensive ones, which I'm like, it's the combination of the two that's infuriating. Come on.
Yeah.
And I love how he's just like, yeah, I got called out for that, so whatever. Take that. That's how punitive they're being about this whole thing. And so, you know, so that was what started it. I think there's a lot of stuff that he hasn't taken into account yet. You know, like you probably will have some sort of security that you'll want to go through, you know, because you step in that thing with a bomb going 700 miles an hour, you could still have problems. You know, so you're still going to have wait times, you know, things like that. There are a lot of questions for me, like, well, how big are these pods? Are they single person? Do I got to share them? You know, obviously at one time he said you could drive a car into it if you wanted, which I think is very interesting. And if you did it, you should go that route, which will probably become like you'll start with a car and then you'll just slowly just have ones that have a ton of seats in them and they'll be, you know, essentially like a bus.
So let me interject.
Yeah,
at this point.
Jump in, man.
This is where it gets kind of cool. So there's this thought. So how much do you know about buoyancy? This is an important question.
I know that. That's what makes boats float in water.
Exactly. Okay, so basically what happens is you have an area – if something is less dense, if you have a fluid that is less dense than another fluid, it will float, right? That's the basic premise. So oil is buoyant on water because it is less dense than water. Now, if you want to create something that is less dense, that is typically more dense, like let's say – stone or metal, perfect example. Let's say you want something like metal that is generally more dense than something than water. Well, metal on its own is just going to sink because water is less dense. So water is buoyant on top of metal, effectively. So what you do is you hollow that metal out, and then you fill it with something that's incredibly less dense than water, like, I don't know, air.
Air.
And then what ends up happening is the average buoyancy of the metal and the air is less than the density of the water, so the boat becomes buoyant in water. And as I've alluded, this is how boats work. Well, there came this idea at some point that maybe we should make blimps. And the idea with blimps was, well, let's pump it with something that's less dense than air. Well, problem is air is very not dense, and even with things like hydrogen and helium, hydrogen is twice the density of helium, and helium is a billion times more explosive in air than helium, or hydrogen is more explosive. So you get this dilemma where if you want to use a less dense gas, then, well, somebody came up with this brilliant idea. Why are we using gas at all? What happens if we took a balloon and filled it with nothing? Then we took the average density of the sphere and the nothing inside of it, it'd be incredibly, you know, it'd have very little density, and it could float. So the most buoyant thing you could make would be a hard shell with a hard vacuum inside of it. The problem is that it's very difficult to make a structure that's rigid with a hard vacuum. So how we actually operate blimps nowadays is we helium, because it's not explosive, and we pump it down to, I think it's like 0.4, 0.3 atmospheres. So we actually get and then we build a rigid structure. We build a skeleton inside of the blimp. Then we pump it, or we actually fill it with hydrogen, or helium, oh my goodness, fill it with helium, and then draw it back down. So what we effectively end up building are these very, very low pressure systems, because we can build low pressure systems. We've got a lot of technology to do that. We can make gigantic low pressure containers. And so Elon Musk basically said, look, we know how to build low pressure containers. That's easy. What's very difficult is building hard vacuums. It's difficult because you've got problems with leakage, you know, stuff coming in. You need incredibly powerful vacuums. It takes a long time, yeah, especially for huge areas. And so he said, well, let's just get it down low. Let's not necessarily get the pressure to the point where there is no pressure. Let's get it to, like, I don't know, high atmosphere. Like, let's get it like we're at the height of an airplane. We can do that with standard vacuum systems. We can depressurize a tube. And so he had to come up with these, like, clever ways where you'd have these, like, sealing chambers so that you can, like, airlocks that will allow you to keep the whole thing depressurized, and then so you just bring up the pressure when you're getting on and off and stuff. And so there are these clever little techniques that you'd have to use to keep the system depressurized the whole time. And he said, if we could do that, we get rid of one of the major hurdles of these problems, which is air resistance. You've got most of your air resistance is gone. There is a problem, though, when you have a tube, you know, out in, you know, if you're up at high enough atmosphere, basically when you're moving at supersonic speeds, what it's actually saying is you're moving faster than the pressure wave can propagate, which means that the pressure wave in front of you, usually when you move, you generate a pressure wave, but it moves so fast, it moves out of your way before you get to the next. Yeah, exactly. But if you move faster than the pressure, what would you say?
I feel it.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever I'm moving around, I'm like, so much pressure.
Pressure waves everywhere. But if you can move faster than the pressure wave, which propagates at the speed of sound, then that pressure will build up in front of you. How you deal with that with supersonic jets is that it just goes out to the left and the right in the form of a sonic boom, a gigantic pressure wave. And the problem is that inside of a tube, you run into the same issue, but it can't go around you. So it bottles up and it basically creates a high pressure area in front of you. So high and progressively higher and higher pressure, because the pressure wave just keeps building until you actually built up more. Even in that low pressure, you've now got more atmosphere that you're moving through. So he basically said, so let's create big old vacuums right in front of it and suck it out. And you're like, okay, cool. What are we going to do with that air? And he goes, what if we just push it down on the ground so that instead of, like, pushing it behind us to move forward, which won't create very much thrust at all, but it will create enough thrust to keep us off the table, off the ground. And so effectively what he's done is he says that's how we'll keep afloat. That's where we'll put the thrust of what we're sucking from in front of us. And that will keep this low pressure, low atmosphere thing. And you're like, well, okay, I could see that, because that's
low. It doesn't require a ton of energy to do that, which was nice.
Exactly.
It's like a subhuman little motor we already have.
Well, you know what it happens to be? It happens to be the motor that's in the Tesla car.
Oh, how convenient.
I know. So it's – guess where they'd have to buy them from? Yeah, and which are like – and the other great part about it is however they're charging these systems, whatever voltage they're running on, they're basically going to have to run that the entire length of San Francisco to L.A. if they build it in San Francisco to L.A., which guess what? That means – whole bunch of charging stations built by the government, you know, because they're, you know, like, well, the power is already there. We might as well tap into it, which a lot of people are like, that's clever, Elon. That's clever.
Well, it's one of those where you sit there and go, that's part of the reason why he was able to dream this up, because
he
understood those motors. He understood how they worked, and he instantly said, well, we could use that to solve this problem. Whereas, like, you and I may not jump to that conclusion just because we're not running Tesla motors.
You don't really know what the power consumption rates are. It's not. You can't do the back of the paper calculations because you don't know you can't estimate the actual information you need. So, and then this is the trick. So, how do you actually propel yourself forward? You can now thrust. You can propel yourself up, which gives you the airbed that you travel on. How do you actually propel yourself forward? Well, what you do is you create. If you've ever gone to Disneyland onto California Adventure, and really many theme parks around the world use this same technology, but it's called Screamin' California is the roller coaster. It basically, they have these long blades that your little cart travels over, and it uses electromagnets to pull themselves forward. It's actually an incredibly common, well-understood technology that's used all over the place. And what's really awesome about them is, as you start to jet yourself forward, you basically use magnets to pull yourself forward. Yeah, that's the long and short of it. And you can you can do it with incredible accelerations. You can get going so fast, so quickly. It's well, you can go, you know, 700 miles per hour down the coast of California and get there in a half hour. Yeah. And the greatest part about these is if used really effectively, which I don't think they'll actually would do this. I think they would decelerate in a more traditional way. Which would be to say that they'll basically run it in reverse. But theoretically, there's no reason to say you can't use induced currents to actually regenerate your power as you come back down.
Which that was what my initial thought was. Was like, why don't you just do that? That way.
So that the only – yeah, essentially moving forward would be almost – would almost have no energy cost to it, or maybe a 10% energy cost to it. And whereas, you know, the lift – still is there, but it's a relatively low lift. You can do it with standard Tesla motors. And it's and effectively what you end up with are these little trains, these little pods that can shoot down the length of California in a half hour, which is incredible. I mean, it's a nutty idea. And you can build them in these tubes that are, you know, they have a certain cost to it. They have and what his estimation of $5 to $6 billion is really the cost of construction, which is very expensive. It's technically less expensive. Well, and he was drawing the comparison to the California bullet train, which was sold to us at $30 billion. It's already an estimated cost of $100 billion. So you sit there and go, $5 to $6 billion, you could build 20 of them for that. What the heck is insane?
You could do both, right? Just tack exactly on the Hyperloop, and let's do the competition. Let's see which one gets used more.
The reality,
as far as they're concerned, it's a rounding error.
Exactly. The reality of it is that it's going to cost a lot more than that, because most of the cost of the bullet train is in regulatory, and most of this additional cost is in regulatory stuff and trying to get, you know, which is kind of crazy that it's like, did you guys not consider that? That you'd have to do that regulation? And the answer is
they purposefully
ignored it to bring the cost down, so that it wouldn't seem as appalling to the California populace.
He did also mention, he goes, you don't have to worry about taking swaths of farmer land, you know, because it's just like having a tree in the field, which they deal with all the time. And I was like, well, it's not quite like that, because I'm sure there will be safety stuff, but.
Yeah, and the bullet train is going to – I mean, these pods might take up less space, but the reality of it is not so significantly less space that you wouldn't run into the same issues. His big argument is that you could, like, you know, you'd actually be better off if you were to build it alongside I-5 or down the median of I-5. Like, use the current infrastructure to your advantage.
That'd be cool.
But you're still like, there are big swaths of I-5 that go directly through residential territory, and there's not necessarily enough room in the median or on the sides of the street. And I am inclined to think that this would be relatively safe, because it's like you put big old rollers on it, so if the air pressure, if your motor gives out and you fall, it's not like you're scraping, you just land, like the maglev trains in China. They're very safe. It's really hard to derail when you're in a, you know, confined in a tube. and so, you know, there are concerns about, you know, security stuff. What happens if somebody gets onto it with a bomb? Yeah, of course that's a concern. But you sit there and you go, you know, there are ways around that that aren't incredibly expensive or there are ways around that. We deal with it with planes all the time. I mean, like, let's be honest. You know, very few planes have exploded in the last 30 years. You know, a few more than we want, but very few in reality. You sit there and you go, there's a lot of issues here that are easy to get around. And the problem is this, and I think this is what Elon realized, is that it's not going to happen in California. Because, and this is a little more political than we usually like to get, but because you're talking about a $100 billion expenditure that's $100 billion to somebody and their employees that's already been signed off on. And he's trying to replace it with a $5 to $10 billion project. I mean, that's $90 billion that California's already has to pay. And there are so many people fighting to try to kill the project, to try to do anything to get the project to cost less. But it's so valuable to so many people that it's not going anywhere. And he knows that. He didn't want to get into the politics of it. But that's the reason why he said, you know what, he's drawing it as a comparison to California because it's such a high-profile project. But it's ludicrous to think that you'd put it between San Francisco and California. No, we're going to have a bullet train in 50 years. It's going to cost us $200 billion when all is said and done. And it's going to be incredibly expensive and, you know, cost prohibitive to use, and it'll be slow. It'll be everything that everybody doesn't want it to be, which is just going to shake your head and go, why did this even happen? The real thing is that where this is going to need to go is going to be China or Japan or Europe. And that's probably where it's going to go. And I don't think Elon wanted to deal with that. I don't think he wants to become an international transportation mogul quite yet. You know, maybe one day. And it's one of those things where he might be just throwing this out there as sort of a, you know, laying the groundwork for, you know, 20 years from now.
I believe him where he's like, I'm busy doing other stuff right now. This is cool. I'm annoyed by this other project. So I'm going to share it because I'm annoyed, but I'm not,
right.
I'm not ready to do it yet.
And I could see it be one of those things where what he has effectively done is he said, hey, this is my theory. Now I need a bunch of other theorists to go through and try to poke holes in it, come up with solutions. And they're going to come up with all these holes in it. Some engineers are going to go, I wonder what it would actually be. I'll bet we could do that. And somebody's going to build a scale model of it and say, hey, this is what it would work. Hey, I want to build a scale model. This sounds
what?
Like that. I want to build a scale model of this. I could do this. I could totally do this. This is like my job. I build low pressure vacuum systems.
Dude,
you should do it.
You should.
I actually might do that. I got to look into it because it'll be kind of an expensive project. But I'll. Okay. But, you know, build a scale model of it. Build one that's like 10 feet in diameter and say, this is how it would work effectively, and this is what it would look like, and it's pretty cool. I like it. Let's go for it, Elon. You know, and what he's going to do is he's now set the groundwork. He started the conversation on this new conceptual technology, which is pretty cool. And what it'll do is it's not going to go in California. There's no chance of it going in California, which to engineer and cost-conscious citizens like me – that's kind of annoying, but
like a New York to DC?
I could see that. I could see it do the East Coast real easily, and I could see it do. I could see it. You know, he claims the cross continental doesn't really make sense, but I bet it does. I'll bet if you could build enough lanes, it'd make a lot of sense to be able to get from.
That would be interesting because I do keep imagining it with a single lane.
Yeah.
But that'd be fascinating if you just did two. You know, I mean, right. He talks about it as a loop, which in sense is already a two lane. But, you know, what
well,
if
it's
it
coming and going.
Two, right. But what if you had two pipes?
Yeah, two sets of pipes.
You know, essentially four.
Right. Or like, and I actually keep thinking of an eight lane, you know, thing where it's, you know, where if you had eight trains going back and forth between, you know, two cargoes and two passenger trains, and you could go, you know, with one layover in, you know, without layover two, and you sit there and you go like, you know, where you could go from like, yeah, could you imagine being able to go from San Francisco to Chicago to DC in the time that it would cost to take a plane, but at a fraction of the cost. I mean, all of a sudden you're talking about something that's actually viable. And I think what he's done is the right thing. He's basically said, this is how it would, you know, he's allowing people to start thinking about it. Okay, guys, start developing, you know, and work out the engineering of it for me. And then we're going to come back to this in like 2 years or in 10 years. After we've gone to space a few more times, after we've got, you know, a bigger lineup of Tesla cars, we're going to come back to this one because that is a big kahuna. That one is worth really like dealing with. And I think, yeah, I really do think that that's what you're going to end up with. And, I don't know. It's exciting. It's really exciting. And because it uses all these technologies that are really easy to understand. Like he's not doing anything crazy. He's just
well, and I know that was the big unknown where they were like, everyone was like, yeah, he probably requires something that needs to be invented first. It's like, no.
Yeah. Right. Which is something, and I, you know, I make that comment of it'd be fun to build this as a, you know, as a, you know, in your living room. And it's because, and you can, you totally can. There's no reason to think you can't. And I've always wanted to build a model maglev train, which would be just kind of a nightmare. But I've worked out in my brain all the different ways that I would do it. And this is sort of a perfect opportunity to say, yeah, I could totally do this. I think, yeah, I don't know. I sit there and I go, he's basically trying to see if anybody else will do it. And he's probably going to be, man, I hope one of these other projects take off.
Man, if it were me, if I were like, I don't know, pick a university that had an engineering program, you know, you might be something like, hey, we're canceling senior projects for the next 5 years. We're all going to work on this. And right. Each class will have a certain goal that we're going towards. And, you know, at the end of 5 years or whatever, you know, it's our goal to build a working model of these things.
See, the thing is that this is going to become a pet project of a couple of different professors. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
There are going to be students. There are going to be people like me that it's going to become a pet project for, and they're going to start to generate a body of literature that, you know, that because there's a general sense with Elon Musk that if he sticks around for another 40 or 50 years, which he's young enough, he theoretically could, there's a good chance that this one's going to come back around. it'll loop back around. And he's going to say, you know what would be really awesome is if we were to do this in this country or in this state, and all of a sudden you're going to be the smartest dude in the room when it comes to this type of technology, because you've been kind of playing, tooling around with it for the last 10 years, and you've written two or three papers, and nobody else has thought through it like you have, and you've got working models. And, you know, in 10 years or 20 years, when Elon decides that he actually wants to do this, and he's got enough money to do it, to be the first initial investor, to get some other state on his side, he's going to, you know, all of a sudden, you're going to be the first guy he comes to and says, hey, want to work for the Hyperloop project? And you're going to be like, yeah, but you're going to have to pay me like $1 million a year. And he's going to say, okay. sounds like a deal.
Sounds reasonable awesome. To me.
Yeah. I'm super rich, so cool. You know, this is $1 billion, you know, and that's what I think is going on here. And it's exciting. It's fun anytime you get one of these like cool little brain teasers of what can we do and how can we do it.
So this has also surfaced a bunch of questions just about him in general. You know, like people are like, how does he come up with such awesome ideas, you know, such grand visions? And you know, so they start dissecting that, where they're like, well, for one, he grew up in South Africa, and so he has this worldview of things. They said he was a total loner and loved to read, but he read voraciously, which gives him all sorts of ideas. And then they were like, plus he does genuinely have a bunch of money right now, which means you can play the what if game, and you know, and you can literally afford to have big dreams and say,
yeah,
you know, you could, because you know, like we say stuff, right? Oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did that? And he, when he says it, he goes, actually, that's only like $1 million. Let's just do it and see what happens. You know what I mean? And we don't have.
Yeah, I would waste so much money if I had so much money like him.
Which in some ways, I mean, he's doing just a whole bunch of interesting R&D projects that tend to work out because he attracts smart people to help him with them. But, you know, but that's what he does. He's like, I think we should – let's look into rockets. And hey, guess what? I got the money for it. Let's do it. You know, and lo and behold, it, you know, has seemed to work out. But anyways, that was one of the – there's like, how does he do it? But it sounded like reading was a big thing on his list, which, by the way, Jeff Bezos also shares that same trait. So
you know,
reading's
what?
Cool, it, kids.
I
stay
you
in school.
Know what? I actually read as much as I can bear, and I feel like I don't read nearly enough. It drives me crazy.
I just finished The Hunger Games, and I moved on to the book two, so, you know, I'm wish I was
catching
listening.
Fire.
Does that count?
Yeah, it counts enough.
And then
the
other
books.
Yeah, yeah. I cried in the middle.
Oh yeah. You're not even done.
Okay,
yet.
Good. Don't spoil it for me. Which, P.S. I finished the first book. Wanted to watch the movie. You can only buy it on iTunes for $15. You can't rent it. And I already know I don't like the movie, so I'm like, no, I'm not going to spend $15 for something
Dude,
I don't like.
It's a,
and
oh,
the Hollywood and Blockbuster have closed in my town.
You don't have Netflix, do you?
No, I don't.
Well, you were talking about getting Netflix to watch some TV series, weren't you?
What,
or was that somebody completely else? That might
I
be
think that was me.
That might be something.
I might have joked about it, but I've never seriously. Yeah. Thought about doing it. So it's on. I saw that. And that was what I started looking around and
I'll
was
make you
like,
I'll make you a profile.
Yes. Yeah, no, I am. Because I started looking around. I was like, what the heck? What's wrong with this? And it was Netflix tied it up. And they made a, you know, exclusive deal where they were the only ones who could, quote, rent it. So stream rent it, right? And so I was like, ah, jeez. So that's how that game's played, apparently. Anyways, back to Mr. Musk. The other big question that they started coming up with was, where does he rank in societal importance? Where, you know, because beforehand, before him, everyone was like, Steve Jobs is the modern miracle.
Right.
Right, where he's like, he created the iPod and the iPhone and the computer and Next and made Pixar what it is. You know, then they start rattling off all these things. And then they're like, you know, now Musk, like, obviously he's got a movie character who's pretty awesome. Based off of him, he's got spaceships, he's got cars, he's now put this idea out there. He did PayPal, right? He's got things going for him. And then they're even like, let's take it a step further where we start talking about Edison and Tesla and other people even farther back. You know, but they're like, where does this guy rank in terms of importance to society? And this is totally opinion-based. So I'd love to see, love to hear what you think his importance is.
If Elon Musk died today, I think he wouldn't be in that league. I think he's definitely in the league of your Bezos and your who's Ellison's. You know, your incredibly innovative, big-time CEOs. I think he's got a little bit further. One of these things really have to make a cultural, economic impact on a societal scale for him to really get into the leagues.
Which PayPal has, in my opinion. Okay, I understand what you're talking about on the level that you're talking about. It's huge, and it's one.
Bezos, I was going to say, the thing is that Bezos, I guess I should say he has to do another one. There's a lot of people do one that seems that you're like, okay, that's cool. I see how you came up with it, and I see you were first, and that's impressive. Because it's like, Ellison came up with something big. Bezos came up with something big. A lot of these guys come up with these big ideas that do really change economies, that change societies. But it's like Ford changed how we thought about manufacturing and thought about consumer, large-scale consumer products. You know, and really radically changed transportation. You know, Steve Jobs changed how we thought about computing. Now, there were brilliant engineers all around him that actually allowed him to give the sales pitch that changed everybody's opinion.
Okay.
But he was the one that – it was his vision that he sold. It was Ford's vision that he sold that was so radical. It was Edison and Edison's an interesting one because it's like Edison was very much the inventor. And, you know, Tesla was very much the inventor. And the biggest difference between Edison and Tesla was Edison was very much the inventor with a whole lot of the salesmen. And Tesla was 10 times the inventor with none of the salesmen, you know. And they ended up taking these strangely parallel paths that ended up diverting at some point. And I think what's cool about and exciting about
about Elon Musk is that he's got the salesman. He's got what Ford had. He has what Edison had. He has what Jobs has. He has the ability to come up with ideas and get you excited about them. And a lot of it is because I think, and I think that what you're going
to see. That's interesting. I mean, you know, just listening to those comparisons, you know, the guys who you're bringing up were guys with extreme focus. They tended to work on the same problem for their entire lives. Often, you know, at different angles and contributing their own things, but it was like, you know, a lot of those guys did one thing and changed the world. Like you said, it's not just that they created something amazing. They changed the way we thought about how the world works.
Right.
You know, we all assumed one thing and they went, no, it could go this other way. And then everybody changed afterwards.
Which Bezos might be, I mean, Bezos is probably, he's probably about as close to that wrong. I think by the time all is said and done, Bezos will be one of those individuals. I think you will think of him as one of your incredible, you know, history-changing innovators and cultural-changing innovators. Whereas, you know, and I do get the feeling that with Musk, that's going to be the end zone of it. But it's kind of he's got to pull it together. He's got to everything.
Well, he's found his interest, right? Which is transportation.
Yeah,
essentially, and you know, with the twist of electricity, I guess.
Right,
but it's transportation really is what he's decided is he's interested in.
And I think the thing is that everybody can feel that he's got the potential. If any single person can do it, that's alive today.
Well,
it's Musk, and that's what's so exciting.
The way that I think about it, it's almost like eBay shouldn't count. When it's done, I feel like that'll just be a side note. Like, oh yeah, well that's how he got his money, and then we actually talk about his contributions to society.
Exactly.
And that just enabled him to do his thing. Which there's a part of me that's like, would he have done it? How do I want to say this? If he hadn't done PayPal, would he still be in this position today? Whereas you think about, and maybe that's why he's able to do two at the same time. Whereas, you know, with some of those other ones, they had to rely solely on their vision and their smarts. And
I know you love SimCity comparison, so I'm gonna say so the latest SimCity game, you're allowed to build multiple cities on the same territory. I built my first city, and it just so happens that I picked back when they were still working out all their algorithms, so it was like I picked being an oil tradesperson, which was incredibly valuable. Metallurgic. It was steel and aluminum, whatever. The point was I was making tons and tons and tons of money. And so I had this ugly, nasty city where there was traffic and the roads were crazy and it was terribly laid out. But I was making like a bazillion dollars. And what I would do is I would play that game for like half an hour. I'd get like $5-6 million going, and then I'd gift three of that to my next city, and I'd spend all of the money, and I would build these incredibly strong infrastructure cities that were, you know, with all the police, all the schooling, everything they need to be these incredibly well-balanced cities, but they're like empty and they don't have any industry yet because they're still building, and they'd be incredibly expensive. So I'd go back to the other city and I'd play it for an hour, and then I'd gift another $3 million to the city while I continue to work and culture the city. And effectively, and I would do that like two at the same time. So I would build these, like, you could build these great cities because you could just give, you just had so much money. It just kept going everywhere. You're like, oh, this is fun. And that's what you're seeing with Musk right now, I think, is that he had enough money and probably not time, but definitely money to take on a couple of different projects at the same time. And I bet if you were to talk to him, he'd say, yeah, I bit off a little more than I could chew. I wasn't patient enough. And I could do more and give more focus to either one of them. He's smart enough. He might be able to give, you know, 98% focus to two at the same time. But I get the feeling that that's the reason why this one gets to sit on the back burner, is because he thinks it's as good of an idea. He actually is overextended though, but it's eBay that allowed him to do it. Now, could he have done either of these? Yeah, he would not have done SpaceX if it weren't for eBay. I can guarantee that.
Yeah.
Because it's not a big enough ROI. That's the fun one. That's the dreamer. I think he actually thinks that Tesla has the capability of becoming a incredible business, mm-hmm. and you know, and taking him from being really, really rich to, holy cow, how can you have that much money, Rich? You know,
well, I don't think he cares about money at this point, but I think he cares about, you know, that will change the world, whereas the SpaceX one may not.
Well, I think he's got one project that he thinks will change the world for the next 50 years, and another project that he thinks will change the world for the next 1,000. You know, and that's what he's doing. Yeah. He's trying to change. You know, he's trying to change the course of human history on a scale that might actually put your Fords and Edisons and Jobs to shame. You know, I think that's what's – well, yeah, and that's part of what's so fun about Musk is that he dreams big. And then he actually gets – you know, he does the classic. He shoots for the stars, and the worst-case scenario, he's going to land on the moon, which, you know, is not too bad, all things considered.